Hello, drama listeners. It is Dylan. Before we get into the episode today, I just want to tell you a little bit about what to expect. So, many of you in the theater community who listen to podcasts have likely heard of Stage Combat, a mental health story. It is sort of this wave rippling podcast that's kind of shattering the stigma around mental health in the theater industry and maybe even rattling a few cages as we talk about. On today's episode, Connor and I got to chat with the creator, the writer, the star, the person who all of this actually happened to, Sean Hayden, who chronicles an experience he had while working at the Goodspeed Opera House and the 3.5 year mental health journey that followed. It's dramatic. He even teases it as a juicy backstage story wrapped up in a true crime podcast format. It is gripping. The entire first season is out. I honestly recommend before listening to this podcast, going and listening to his whole first season before you listen to this, because not that there's spoilers per se, but it will provide extra context as you listen. You know me as a true crime junkie, I loved this podcast, but at the same time, it's incredibly enlightening, and you'll get to see Sean's heart and learn a little bit more about him as we get to chat with him, as well as learn about season two, which has slowly been dropping from the time that we recorded this podcast. If you want to support us, like we're supporting another podcast today, you can donate $5 a month to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/thedramapodcast, where you can join our close friends. You'll get bonus episodes that are just Connor and I, and so much more fun content. You might even have some little surprises this fall. Thank you to everyone for listening, and let's get on with the show.
Press play. Curtain up and now we're in. It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nominated?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well. What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. We've been talking a little bit about like our podcast origins, because I know that you were just on a Broadway con panel that was about like how to start a podcast.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Shout out to Charles at Backstage Babble, who asked me to be on a panel at Broadway con for how to start a Broadway podcast. And it was really great to connect with people who were had their own shows and who had genuine questions. It was so awesome. And it really got me in my feelings because it was very origin story vibes.
Yeah.
How'd you begin? How'd you build an audience? How this, how that? And before we hit record a few seconds ago, we were talking about how pre-COVID, every single in-person episode of Drama was recorded at Chetler Studios.
Yes.
And so now I'm remembering those times. I mean, we were always very sweaty, overwhelmed, because we were lugging all that tech.
Oh
we
my
would
God.
Bring it with us to Chetler. Now you just open up a laptop at home.
I know.
It's crazy how things have changed. I do. One of the questions that was on the panel was, do you prefer recording in person or via Zoom? And we all had like different ones for different reasons. But that in-person experience was pretty special.
I do miss that a lot. I don't miss the nerves of waiting for them to arrive and whatnot. But okay, the reason I bring up the origin stuff is because last week I opened my podcast app, you know, as it downloaded all the episodes for the day. And like a ghost from my past, one of my favorite podcasts, Theater People Podcast, appeared. You and I both fell in love with that show when we first moved to New York, hosted by the legendary Patrick Hines, who now makes a living out of podcasting. But he promoted this new podcast on it called Stage Combat. And it was this incredible breath of fresh air, not only hearing from Patrick, but also being introduced to a new podcast. Because I know that, Connor, I know you don't listen to a lot of theater podcasts.
Not really. I mean, is that like okay to say out loud?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like because I work in it and we do this show, I like to listen to other things throughout the day that, you know, keep my mind off of life and work.
I think that's healthy for sure. But, you know, it was funny because that Patrick and his show, although it's been off the air for a while, I think was a big inspiration for us in getting
100%.
Drama started.
100%. I like to think of us as a spiritual successor to his show because we do a very similar format to what he does. So
totally.
Shout out to Patrick. Because he, you know, brought theater podcasting into our lives in a big way. And now he brought today's guest into our lives in another way. Well, actually, the stars kind of align because we similarly were like,
I know it's that's so funny. We'd also gotten, you know, emailed.
Yeah.
Anyways.
But can we dive in? Because We've spent hours listening to his voice and hearing his story because mm-hmm. you and I both binged season one of his show this weekend.
Yes.
And season two is dropping tonight or in the past when you're listening to this. So Dylan, please do that intro and bring our guest in because it's time to get started.
My pleasure. Our guest today is the star, director, and creator of the podcast, Stage Combat, A Mental Health Story. This audio experience is currently making waves in the theater community as a raw and honest portrayal of the true story behind our guest's time at the Goodspeed Opera House while starring in Billy Elliot the musical. His other onstage appearances include touring with The Light in the Piazza and Mamma Mia, as well as regionally in Camelot, Freaky Friday, The Bridges of Madison County, Next to Normal, and more. He is a thought leader when it comes to mental health practices in the workplace, penned an op-ed called Men and Mental Health that appeared in The Economic Times. And our guest is also a lawyer, a husband, a dog dad, and more. The new second season of our current podcast obsession, Stage Combat, comes out July 25th. So it is available now when you're listening to this. Please welcome to Drama, Sean Hayden.
Thank you, Dylan. Thank you, Connor. So good to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. How are you doing, Sean? Are you well?
I am well. How are you doing?
Things are good. It's been a very busy summer. I know Personally, I've been traveling a lot, and now I'm finally planted in Columbus for the rest of summer, and I am so excited to just be in one spot.
Good. Yeah, a little summertime downtime is good for everybody.
For sure.
I haven't been in a pool once this summer. Like, that's like one of those things where I'm like, I need to like get into a pool. It's easier to when you're not in New York. So
I am planning to do that very soon. Yes.
Good. You deserve it. You deserve a nice soak.
Thank you. I need a soak. It's been quite a ride. So a good soak would help. Yes.
Yeah. Connor, what about you?
I'm well. I have this like summer cough that won't go away. It's not COVID, I promise. But no, I'm great. And similar to you, Dylan, like I feel like it's been such a busy summer that I've been all over the place. Although now I am randomly going to London for like a long weekend next week. But after that, I'm back. Yeah, Sean, what have you been up to this summer? Anything fun other than creating a
series? I had this little podcast called Stage Combat, A Mental Health Story. So, guys, I have literally been doing nothing but the podcast because, as you guys know, season one came out. I believe we dropped May 16th. Okay. And so while we were in post for that, we were recording season two. And so it's just been nonstop. And then kind of all the flurry that happened when season one came out. So, you know, we've been in a rush to the finish line to get season two out and really excited about completing the story of what really happened behind the scenes at the Goodspeed Opera House.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. It's such a treat to hear you say that on here. Cause you know, you have this way, this timbre in your voice of delivering lines and the way that you go about your show. Cause it is scripted.
Yes.
I feel like I'm part of it now.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. It's interesting. The people feel like they know me in some way and you can't ask for more than that because you know, the listener has let you into their life, you know? And that was the whole point of the podcast was that my story, that people would feel seen, they would feel heard, that it would resonate. So that's always a really good thing to hear.
For sure. And similarly, I feel like you've let us into your life. I really feel like I have a great idea for who you are, your values, what's important to you. And it's truly such a well put together show. So kudos to you. I love that you did like a season one drop and then a couple months later, you're like, okay, here's season two. It's very Selling Sunset season one and two dropping within months of each other, which for those of you who know, you know.
What? But
anyway, I know. Oh, that was for like the five Selling Sunset. Although I don't know if I should be promoting that show during the strike right now, but anyway.
No, it's unscripted.
It's reality. You're right. Mm-hmm. Well, it is scripted in a lot of ways, even though it's reality. But anyway, Sean, we're going to talk all about your show. We're going to get totally into it. I'm afraid once we start, we won't be able to stop. So I'm curious if we can do one of our segments we do with all of our guests, which is ask you about the moment that got you into the arts, because as you know, our listeners will learn once they listen to your show, you share about your life. We know tidbits, but we don't necessarily know about the origin story. The thing that got you into the theater, the arts, we call it Ring of Keys. We borrowed from Fun Home because we like to think of it as maybe a moment of recognition where you're watching something or performing in something. It's personal to everybody, but where you realize that you loved the arts and didn't just like it and you wanted to make it a bigger part of your life. Do you feel like you had a Ring of Keys moment?
Yeah. And I actually, it's part of a cold open for episode 7 of season 2. I go into a little bit about that. You know, I think like a lot of actors, it's just something innate. It just feels like it was always something that we wanted to do. But I was raised in a very evangelical Baptist background. My father was a preacher.
Right.
I played the piano in his church. And so actually acting was forbidden in my family. I was made clear that I was not going to be an actor. So my whole life, like so many actors, has been trying to get myself on the stage in spite of the nose, you know, and nose can come from a lot of different places. They can come from your family. They can come from casting agents. They can come from whatever's going on inside of our head, you know, the voices or the tapes that we're playing, you know. So that was always my experience. But then, as you guys know from the first episode of Stage Combat, I'm also a lawyer.
Yes.
but I also loved law. I just wanted to do both. And I think that's something when people meet me, they don't quite understand. It's like, are you this? Well, I'm both. Mm-hmm. I've always had two parallel careers. So even, you know, when I started as a lawyer, it was kind of frowned upon by my legal colleagues. Why are you acting?
Mm.
You know, so, you know, always trying to kind of establish who I am and what I want to do has just always been, you know, who I am. And so I guess that's how, I mean, the way my first job was first grade, there was a Christmas play and the teacher's name was Mrs. Scipio. And she handed out the parts to the kids she wanted to be in the play. And I didn't get one. There was no audition. I was like, this is not democratic. And so I went up to her and said, I want to be in the play. And so she gave me the last half of the last line of the play. So my first words on the stage were, like mother told us to.
Wow. And I know you nailed it.
I made so much of that last line that one of the kids gave me a note that I was doing it too big.
Wow.
In first grade.
That's great. First grade. So that's like what, like 7, 8 years old, something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, even then, fellow actors were giving you notes. So
it starts young. It really does. The
emboldened. It starts young. It yeah. does. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you continue acting through your schooling?
I really started acting in college.
Okay.
And then this is crazy. I was in law school and I tried out for West Side Story and I was cast as Tony. And my grades went up that semester.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, it was. And so then that was in New Orleans. I moved to Dallas, Texas. I got my equity card. So I got my equity card the hard way where you had to work 50 weeks, mm-hmm. you know, but taught me a lot about being a professional actor. A lot of the sort of values that you hear in stage combat, what it means to be a professional, standard, safety, things like that. So I really value that sort of apprenticeship at that time, as frustrating as it was. And then after that, I moved to New York City.
Okay. Wow. I don't know if I missed this. Did you grow up in Louisiana?
No, I only went there for law school, but I did grow up in the Deep South. So I grew up in a very small town in North Florida, an hour from the Georgia border. Now you would just call it DeSantis country.
Yes.
Right. But it was very, very Southern, very strict, not a great climate for someone who would come out, you know,
right.
later in his life. So yeah. So once I came to New York City, I felt at home and I felt at home ever since. So.
Oh, that's yeah. so beautiful.
As many of us do who come from different places.
Absolutely. Right. It yeah. was calling your name. I could hear yeah. the Southern accent in your voice, especially yes. the way you say Texas.
Yeah, it comes out sometimes.
Yeah, like from Ohio, I say Texas, but yeah. you say Texas. It's
yeah, and in the podcast, I'll say writer. Mm-hmm. And I heard it in an edit, and I'm like, I'm not changing it. But it comes out when I've had a margarita. Or if I get a little mad, it comes out. Yeah,
for sure. I have a logistical question. When did you come out? If you don't mind sharing,
I came out very late. So I came out in my early 30s.
Okay,
you know, and I actually, you know, I married a woman that I was very much in love with. So I married my college sweetheart. So I had to go through that entire process in the South. You know, two people who loved each other, but I was a gay man.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still a very good friend of mine. She's remarried. She's very happy. But that was part of my journey. And then the strange thing is, just as I was coming out, I was cast to play Joe Pitt in Angels in America.
Oh, wow.
In Fort Worth, Texas. So instead of Mormonism, it was I was a Baptist. But
yeah.
I played all of that as therapy
right.
in front of audiences. I hear I was pretty good, but that was my actual life.
Right.
I was wow. just going to say, sounds therapeutic to do it on stage.
It was literally what I was going through. And I'm like, this is not hard. So, But that was one of the times where I was very grateful for the theater to share my story in a very raw way on stage and to really know firsthand what that character was going through in similar circumstances. Now, my wife was not a pill popper or anything like that.
I was going to say, no Harper
so
there.
There was no Harper there. No, so that was not part of my story. So let me just clarify that.
You know, and I understand, you know, everyone's on a different timeline. And growing up in the evangelical church, I mean, I can't imagine that was easy with families either. So
it was just not even an option. Yeah. It was not an option, guys. You know, we see all the backlash that's happening now, but, you know, you take that times 10. I mean, that was sort of, well, that was the world I grew up in.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You're stronger for it now. I mean, you are so eloquent and mature and worldly. And so, you know, you've had all these incredible experiences, and it really culminates, I think, with this. I mean, I know it's probably been difficult, but it's quite an achievement, a passion project that I think is going to help a lot of people. And from what I understand, it's already helped a lot of people who have reached out to you since the first season dropped. We have so many specifics to ask about the show
in general. Go for it.
I also don't want to spoil anything about season two, because I know that there's probably like a little embargo and people are chomping at the bit to get into the next season.
I know. Well, before we dive in, do you mind, Sean, telling our listeners what Stage Combat is and maybe just like a little tease just to get them interested? Because you can say it better than we can.
Yeah. You guys were talking about Patrick Hines. So who's an incredible podcaster. Yeah. He's hilarious. And I'm also glad to have him as a new friend. But Patrick described it perfectly. Stage Combat is a mental health story told like a true crime podcast wrapped in a juicy backstage theater tale. It just happens to be what happened to me in 2019 when I collapsed on stage in front of a live audience while I was playing Billy's dad in a production of Billy Elliot at the famous Goodspeed Opera House. And it happened because of my work conditions. It happened because I didn't feel safe. There were issues, as you guys have heard in season one, with another coworker about safety, harassment. And my mind, my body, as you hear in the first scene of the podcast, we start with a man on the ground and we work our way back and figure out how did he end up on the ground? Sort of like a film noir tale, sort of like the opening of Sunset Boulevard, but it's the Goodspeed Opera House stage instead of Norma Desmond's swimming pool. And I'm not dead. Let's just clarify that.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, I came close to it, but I'm not dead. Mm. So the story is told in scripted nonfiction. So it's like, you know, our parents used to listen to radio shows. It sounds like a true crime podcast, but I tell it in the first person in two different voices because there are two parallel stories going on, as you guys know. Mm-hmm. And then after each 20-minute serialized story that ends in a cliffhanger, because we are in the theater and it's what happened in my life once again, we have a 10-minute conversation with a mental health professional. And so we get to unpack some of those mental health issues that you heard in the story. So hopefully this juicy backstage story is what gets people really engaged. But then it becomes about something so much bigger than what happened to me at the Opera House. We're talking about things that we need to talk about in the theater, and we're not talking about it. That's the podcast.
That was a remarkable description that you just gave. And it's at times it feels like fiction because it is truly, it's a wild journey that you went through. And I'm grateful that you're here to tell it on the other side. It is pretty juicy in a way that like we immediately care about you for whatever reason. I think it's that you're very earnest in the telling of everything and you give us great context. But like there was never a doubt in my mind throughout the whole story that I ever questioned you. You know, I think that the listeners are right on your side because it's just the way that you go about telling the story. And I think it's a huge testament to you and the team that put it together. So hats off to you again.
I appreciate that. You know, the story of what happened to me at the Opera House was that people were denying what happened to me. People were telling me implicitly or explicitly that what was happening was not happening. So to be able to tell my story, gosh, every interview I get to some point and I get a little emotional, but it means so much for all of us. You know, we say at the every episode, right? Claim your story at the end of it. And I mean that, not just for myself, but the person listening, because there are people that will try to take your story away from you, deny you the story. So that means a lot to me for you to say that, Dylan. Thank you.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know if in 2019 yet we had the word for it. I know it became big in in the Trump era, the word gaslighter. Mm-hmm. I feel like you were just gaslit left and right.
Wait till season two.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I think you said on the interview with Patrick Hines that season two, it gets even crazier with what's happening.
Yeah.
And that, like, a pit formed in my stomach when I heard that, because it is enraging at times the way that you're gaslit in this first season.
Yeah, season two really is the mental health story. So, you know, it's funny, you live through this, and I kept asking my husband for season one, are people going to care about this? You know, is it going to be consequential enough to people? But that's because I've lived with it for so long. And you know, like I said, you had people denying what was happening. So season two, and I have said on social media, it is more intense. So I hope any of our listeners or new listeners that, you know, it is something you should take some self-care, you know, pace yourself, because I know a lot of season one has been very triggering for people. Because what I'm talking about is not an isolated event. You know, the people that write to me every day, Dylan and Connor, are telling me about being gaslit in the theater or working with a Chad type of person, or their mental health not being respected, their worth not being respected, and being so fearful of speaking up because, mm-hmm. you know, it is, like we say in the podcast, it's ingrained in us that we can't speak up or you'll be labeled that D word, difficult, mm-hmm. and then you'll never work again. Right. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that word, if you've listened to season one, has particular significance. So,
right. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, you know, the characters that are real people that you interacted with, but the characters feel so real to me, even not working on a stage. These are people that are in every kind of workplace too, that push papers around a desk and use different forms of manipulation, or I hate to say gaslighting again, but, like, you know, abuse, or showing you, oh, thank you so much, I love working with you so much, I really appreciate it, and then you never really hear from them when you need them, stuff like that. So it's a very relatable story in every way, I think, in a sad way especially. But, you know, the entertainment junkie in me is, like, eating it up like candy because it is so well-crafted narratively. And I'm not really a true crime guy. Dylan knows this.
No, Connor does not like it at all.
It makes me feel kind of upset, which I know is troubling, but... this is, it's so well done that I literally cannot wait for season two. I mean, and
thank you so much.
I say this with you sitting here in front of me today. Just now we got to talk about Chad. Now for me, I listened to episode one. I listened to episode two. The Chad episode was three, right?
All about Chad.
All about Chad. That's when I was really hooked. I was like, who is this figure? Like, intriguing, terrifying, attractive, you know, these qualities of this sort of, I don't want to use the word villain, but every story's got a villain, right? And he really kind of lurks in and you're like, uh-oh, there is so much intrigue around this person. I don't know where this is going. And I'm wondering for you, there's the Chad, there's the other people, like, you know, the Gabriel, all these other characters, but is there someone that it's been, like, the hardest to talk about on the show? That you're like, oh, I feel this visceral reaction.
Yeah, look, and I don't use the word villains. I just say, this is what happened to me, right? I just tell the story and let the audience mm-hmm. form their own opinions. And as we say in the content warning, that we changed the names of the cast members. And the way that started was, when I started writing this in April of last year, I could not write Chad's real name without being traumatized. I think you guys know from socials that this is not just a panic attack. It was a 3.5 year mental health journey for me. Now, I've come out on the other side of that, and we can talk about that. Mm-hmm. And that's largely because of the cathartic value of doing the podcast. But I could not write his name mm-hmm. without feeling traumatized, because what happened was so bad, and it gets worse in season two. So I named him Chad, and then from there made the decision, well, let me just have a clean delineation mm-hmm. on the cast. So that would be the person. Now, when I listen to the podcast, it's very, very, very difficult to hear the words and the emails from members of that management team. The three episodes that will drop, there's some difficult stuff to hear. And as you guys know, there were two parallel stories. So, you know, we'll give a little bit away. We tell our listeners at one point in the series that there's another story and I won't learn about it for 2 years. And then season two, you'll find out, how do I learn about that? So I still find myself asking, guys, as an artist, it's about our emotions and our empathy. And if we don't have that, we have nothing to put on the stage. So we know show business is nasty. We know everybody wants to get ahead. My husband is a writer. We've both been in entertainment all of our lives. I never dreamed that what happened in my story would happen. So I find myself sometimes still hearing some of those lines. It's a little tough. Yeah.
I can't even imagine. Speaking of the writing aspect of it, why did you feel that podcasting was the right medium to tell your story?
Well, we tell you that in season two.
Okay.
It's very much part of how did the podcast come about?
Okay. You know? That's great.
And it's very much about, you know, the power of telling our stories. Oprah a couple of years ago did a mental health series, mini series, like a reality show. And she said, it is the telling of our stories, being able to say, this is what happened to me. That's crucial to recover from trauma, to recover from a mental health trauma. And what happened to me at the Opera House was trauma. Like I said, you'll find out how that became the right medium. And that's part of the story of how we get there by the end of the season two. So there really is a full, and I want to tell people, look, I've had 3.5 years to come out from this. So as bad as things are, you know, I'm doing well. Mm-hmm. Some people often ask me, how are you?
Right.
I should have been more specific when you said, how are you doing? I should have said, I'm doing better now, you know, but we do. It is a really, if I'm looking at it and I don't know this guy, I think the audience will find it's a satisfying arc in terms of us all being able to tell our stories.
Mm-hmm. On that note, was there anyone who discouraged you from sharing your story? Other than the Good Sweet Opera House, probably.
Okay. well, you're the first person to ask that. There's a lot of people that have been very quiet. Mm. There's a lot of people who are still quiet. I expect that. I mean, if you know the story, what happened, I don't like it, but I expect it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of it, they're starting to come around. I think a lot of New York actors are listening to this secretly. You know, the people we're hearing from every day, they're actors from all around the country that don't have any ties to the Good Sweet Opera House or New York casting directors. So, you know, I'll give you an example. You know, you can put up a picture on your Facebook where you look kind of cute. Like, like. But you put up something about mental health and it's silent, you know, or if it's something about the podcast, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm aware that the podcast is controversial. I'm aware that it is an industry shaking podcast. And I think a lot of people are frightened of that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're still trying to entice the Broadway theater press. You may have heard Patrick Hines talking about this. Mm-hmm. You know, it hasn't been covered. Why is that? Why is it that these organizations, they write about mental health? I've seen the articles. They're great articles. We would love to talk to them. So we've had not one, but two teams of publicists try to reach out to these media outlets and write about, you know, something that happened at a theater that has imported 21 productions to Broadway. So I'm confused by that, but our invitation still stands because I think our listeners, your listeners, actors, they want to talk about this.
Mm-hmm. They do. I mean, drama, that's so wrong. And it's kind of like how Broadway sort of skipped past parts of the Me Too movement. I mean, Hollywood got hit with it, but Broadway still hasn't really had that table flip yet.
I find that very perplexing too. Mm-hmm. And you remember there's a Me Too talk in Stage Combat, right? Because it was in 2019. So I think we were all expecting coming out of the pandemic because we were hearing about mental health. But I don't see the theaters talking about it. I saw them change their mission statements about DEI. Mm-hmm. I don't see anything about mental health. How is that possible?
Yeah.
You know,
it's absurd.
So, yeah.
It's definitely industry shaking. And I appreciate that you're not backing down from it. I think that the silence comes from people not wanting to be, they don't want to betray someone because it's, you know, the community is small. Maybe they feel that it would rattle some cages that they shouldn't be. And I think that people need to just own what they've done. I would hope, and this is just, you know, I might be speaking out of turn, I would hope that people would apologize to you for what happened. I don't know where you're at with it all, but I think you deserve a big apology. And honestly, a big payout. I'm just
Well, and I think that, you know, everyone listening in secret and reaching out to you, and this story is probably not too dissimilar to what happens to actors all the time, you know, and that's, maybe it's too close to home and they're not ready to shake the system yet like you are. So you're doing the hard work, Sean. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I mean, honestly, guys, you know, like I said, I've had 3.5 years. I will never get an apology, but I don't need it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need it. I have my story. What you'll see in season two, where did this get to where what I was trying to do was more than about me, more than about what happened to me at the Good Speed. And that's what we're seeing with season one, because it is helping people. That's, I mean, yeah. You would not believe the stories that I get every day. Mm. And I respond to them personally, and they do feel, people are feeling seen. And I didn't dream that. You know, I'm a middle-aged white guy in New York City. People from all communities, identities, that are finding something in the story that they identify with. Mm-hmm. And that's more than I could have ever hoped for.
Sure. You mentioned that, you know, there was this whole other story going on while the story that of your life was just playing out. And yeah. In that, you know, you didn't realize what was happening behind the scenes. There's the story on opening night about there's like a meeting that occurs, and meanwhile, you're giving out opening night gifts and whatnot.
I was, isn't that so sad?
It broke my heart in so many ways, sad. But also you're an amazing, thoughtful gift giver. Like
I thought it was nice.
Oh
but
my gosh. Yeah.
It's so, I look back at it and I was like, oh, that's just so sad.
I know. Well, no, I think it's a great detail.
Did Chad get a gift?
He got a card like the rest of the cast.
That's okay. Nice.
Yeah. I don't know what Donna Lynn did with her mug. I have a feeling it's not around anymore.
No, yeah.
Oh, she irked me. Let me tell you. But I guess I don't have to, you know. But so was that the last time you performed on stage?
It was.
It was? Do you?
It was.
I don't know if this is like a simple way of asking a deeper question, but do you feel the desire to get back on stage again, or is doing something like this fulfilling that creative outlet that you used to get from performing in that way?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer, Connor. I don't fully have the answer. You know, in season two, we deal with what is the emotional fallout from what happens to me from a panic disorder and my ability to work as a performer, my ability to process things creatively. Now, obviously, after hearing the podcast, you can see there's been some turnaround in my ability for my brain to process things creatively. But it was a real struggle for me during those 3.5 years. And we dramatize it in a scene with my psychiatrist where I'm listing all these things that I can't do anymore. So where I end up, look, I'd never made a podcast before. I mean, I just learned it on the fly, and thank God it turned out right. So I love doing this, and I love the way that it's been able to affect people. Season two will be the end of my story, hopefully, unless something horrible happens. So, you know, I'm not even going to speculate. So, you know, we're going to ask our listeners, what would you like to see in a season three? Do you want to hear other people's stories? Do you want to hear mental health stories or some sort of hybrid? So,
yeah.
So we'll see. I think it's something I'm still trying to figure out, Connor, as far as, you know, where I fit in the performing arts world as an actor. Mm. But it's okay that we don't know all the answers to everything yet, right? I mean, we have an episode, it's called The Edge of What You Know. And sometimes all you can do is step to the edge of what you know and say, that's okay. This is what I know today. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll know more tomorrow or the next day.
Wow. That's comforting.
That is. It is. I think that there's lots of possibilities for what season three could be as well. So I'm excited.
You'll have to send those to me, Dylan.
Yes.
Send those to me. Jot your ideas down.
I have another specific question just from listening. There in the chat episode, you mentioned that he starts dressing like you, invites you to go on a hike, things like that. What do you think the significance of that was?
Look, I think that's one of those things where I don't want to speculate on the psychology of a person.
Sure.
All I can do is, and you're not the only one to ask me that. So everyone asked that. Did it make me feel uncomfortable? Yes. Did my gut tell me something was not right? And the podcast is over and over is my gut telling me things are wrong. Things are so wrong.
What is happening at the Good Sweet Opera House?
And that's what people are responding to. They're like, mm-hmm. I had this and my gut was telling me and I should have listened to it, you know? So I don't know what was going on. There are aspects of that relationship that what I found out make me extremely uncomfortable. In my opinion, it should have made my employer concerned, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think I'll just leave it at that.
That's
but
fair.
That is a question that everyone has.
Additionally, I looked up the Goodspeed website. I noticed you're not listed on the cast anymore.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah. Is that covered in season two?
It is. You would not believe how many people ask me about that. They do. Yeah, it will be covered. So you're saying if you go there right now that I'm not there?
Gone without a trace.
Yeah. Really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it says a different actor played the dad.
Is that right? Okay.
Yes.
I guess we'll have to wait till season two and find out.
Very good.
This is quite a tease here.
You and your cliffhangers.
You know how to hook the listeners, you know.
You will find out the answer, Dylan. And you're gonna find out pretty quickly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Very good.
Yeah.
I have another question. I feel like I'm just like getting my, living my fantasy of like, how often in your life do you get to binge a piece of content and then have a sit down with the person who created it all? Like it's, I feel like a crazy person right now, but anyway.
No, I'm all here for it.
You like it? Maybe this is covered in season two, which sorry if that keeps, if we keep boxing you into that being your answer, but
yeah.
Since publishing season one, have you heard from anyone that was in the cast with you working at the Opera House in a positive way?
So we covered this in a Q&A. We had a bonus episode and someone asked us that. And the answer is I have not.
Really?
I assume that many of the cast members are listening to it. And I hope they are, because I assume they're getting new information that they did not have. But the answer to that is a simple no. Now, when you listen to season two, you might get an inkling of maybe why, but you may have a hard time understanding why that's not happening now after hearing the podcast.
Okay. Is your husband a true crime fan?
My husband is a really, my husband's a screenwriter.
A screenwriter. Okay.
Yeah.
So is he striking currently?
He is on strike. That's going to be my rant later, guys.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
He is on strike. Look, I'd never written anything before. We're actors. Our job is to interpret the other words of other people. So we actually talk about this in the podcast in season two. How am I going to do this?
Yeah.
And he's like, you just write your story, you know? And when I figured out the way to tell it, what I heard in my head, I heard it sort of at this true crime, because I'm a lawyer. It's investigative, right? So you have an email that says 1127. The email goes out, right? So the question was about my husband, actually. And I went to myself. My husband is a really good storyteller, and my husband's really good with structure. So he was a great mentor, you know, setting this, telling it like a true crime. He was very good to go and say, he would say, I think your setup is wrong, or you don't need all of this, or, you know, you're arguing too much for the jury and we need to know how you feel, Sean, about what's happening. Oh. So, and then my mother-in-law, his mom, taught writing for 40 years. Oh. So I had two mentors. So every script, I would give it to them. I'd get notes. I'd go back and rewrite. They go back again. We'd have talking sessions, and then we would do the episodes. They would listen to them. They'd give me notes. I'd go back, rewrite, re-record. So it was a very involved process, but happened to be two members of my family. So they were
That's
really great
special
resources. It was special because, you know, guys, they went through, and I've said this, everything that Goodspeed did to me, they did to my husband, mm-hmm. you know, because my husband was by my side. So he had to watch me go through that pain. And we talk about this in one of the post-show talkbacks, the ripple effect of mental health, not just the guy who collapsed, it's the people around him. And in some ways, that cast didn't ask to be drawn into this controversy, this drama, because it wasn't being handled. They came for the same reason I did, to do a show. So when we have a crisis, and maybe if it is the result of a job situation, it's affecting a whole community of people. So it should make us stop to think, well, maybe there's things we could do better, so that crisis doesn't happen in the first place.
Yes. Well, I think you're just a terrific advocate for mental health and refining and maybe even creating processes. Not that it should be your responsibility, but I appreciate your voice to, you know, get those conversations started and to provide advice. So it's definitely making an impact. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Dylan. You know, I'm able to look at it now and say, yes, that was the worst 3.5 years of my life. But if out of that pain, that it's making life better for people. It's telling people, I need to draw boundaries on the job. I need to speak up for my mental health. Maybe I need to leave a job if I feel like I'm working for people that don't care about me, that don't care about my health. So, you know, that's more than I could ever ask for.
Absolutely.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for chatting about your show and mental health. And I feel like the conversation will continue for sure. As people listen to season two, I'm so excited to dive in for so many reasons. We're sadly wrapping up with you today, Sean. But before we say goodbye, we do end with a dose of drama, which is where we talk about the fun drama, the stuff we've been binge watching, or, you know, maybe something we saw on stage. Or maybe it doesn't have to be that fun. Maybe it can be, like, really something you've got to get off your chest. So, speaking of binge watching, I finally, of course, 7 months later, just binge watched the reality competition series, The Traitors, the UK version. Now, I watched the US version 7 months ago, but everyone, it's on Peacock. You've got to watch The Traitors. It's the game Mafia, but played out with real people.
Have you seen it, Sean?
I had not, but my husband, Ian, was obsessed with it and would watch it every night while he was making dinner for us, because he cooks. So, but he was obsessed with it and loved it.
He's got great taste. Everyone, listen to Ian. Listen to me. It's the British version that you have to watch. It's the U.S. one had a mix of reality show contestants and, you know, normal people. And I felt that it just it was still really good, but the civilians got swallowed up by the reality contestants. The U.K. version, it's civilians. They all have their own twists and turns they bring into the house, too. So bingeable, so fun, lighthearted. It's really, really a great show, so everyone needs to go watch it to keep your mind off things. But, Dylan, do you have a dose of drama today?
I do, because this, like, there's stuff going on with Twitter now. You know, I feel like we're constantly talking about, is Twitter going to be a thing anymore? Should we leave Twitter? I've pretty much made the decision that I think I'm going to be deleting my Twitter and leaving it forever. I don't want to be any part of the nonsense that's going on. It's turning into something called X now. It just feels like a big joke. I don't really know. It feels like a storyline in like Veep or even the other two. You know, we're not supposed to talk about struck scripted things, but it feels like just a hellscape even worse than it's been for the last 5, 6, 7 years. So
it does sound like something from the other two.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. What? Like, this is what you're calling it, X now?
Or it's a Bond villain and the media outlet's going to take over the world.
You know, basically that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes.
Both possibilities are extremely close to reality.
At the same time, they could happen together.
Mm-hmm. That's true. You know, a Bond villain needs a fun accent though. So I don't know. Although Elon does kind of have a weird voice. Anyways. Sean, do you have a dose of drama for us today?
Well, I don't have anything I'm really benching because I've been making a podcast. So.
A little busy.
So I think the only thing I've had a chance just in between is to check out the last All-Stars Drag Race.
Yes.
And episodes of Is It Cake. I mean, that's how dull my life has been. And I'm really looking forward to getting out of the studio so I can really catch up on a lot of stuff. I'm really kind of over watching people take knives to things to see if there's cake inside. I'm a little tired of that.
Or drag queens taking knives to one another's backs when they're stabbing them in the back and voting them off of All-Stars.
Yeah, that was a wild season.
Yeah. Are you pleased with the winner?
Yes. Yes. Me too. I don't want to say anything that's going to bash any drag queens right now because they all need our support. But it was an odd season. But Jim, can we say the winner?
Oh, yeah.
We love Jimbo. My gosh. I mean, that Shirley Temple was the most bonkers thing I've ever seen. Like, I could just indefinitely, you know what? After this interview, I'm going to go play that. And I'm just going to laugh my ass off because that was just bonkers.
It was really funny. Yeah, Jimbo was great. It was an odd season. I don't want to tear them down, so I guess I won't critique.
I'm not going to tear them down. Yeah. I think we're all thinking the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. But Jimbo, Shirley Temple was great, and also some of the other Jimbo moments were, I think, worthy to make her the winner of the All-Stars.
And I like his spirit. There's something about him I really like. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got the creativity, but there's something kind of humble about him at the same time. Mm-hmm. And fabulous, and I love that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? He's not mean. There's a little meanness on that scene.
Yes. I know. Oh my goodness. Well, they're currently filming the next All Stars that'll come out in
already?
A year from now, so
I guess so.
Yeah. Now and forever.
Yeah. So we'll see who's on that one and if there's any format changes, which I'm hearing rumors there might be. Anyways, listen, everyone needs to go and listen to Stage Combat Season 1. There's still time. If you don't want to binge it, which the temptation is real. To binge it, believe me. But honestly, like Sean said, you might need to take care of yourself while doing it. Take some time because when it's over, you're going to just want to go and listen again. And season 2 is going to be coming out. Is it coming out like weekly or?
The episodes will drop on Tuesdays and Fridays, except the first week it drops on Tuesdays. And then so it will run through the end of the summer. So there's two more episodes than the last season. Yay. So there's 11 episodes. We have some bonus episodes dropping in too. So there's a lot more content. So it will take you through the end of the summer, just like you were reading a juicy book by the pool, back to the swimming pool again.
Yes.
Right? I love that pitch there. That's great. I cannot wait, Sean. Thank you so much for chatting with us and for sharing your story today, but also in your podcast, which is truly fabulous work. So thank you.
I appreciate it. And I appreciate your support. And maybe we'll meet again and hear your questions about season 2.
You know, we're going to have tons. So we'll need to. When I come to this city, we'll get together. Where can people find you online?
Yeah. So you can find us on Instagram at Stage Combat, the podcast IG. You can listen to Stage Combat free at all the podcast directories. And if you've got a parent or someone who doesn't really like to use apps, you can listen to it at stagecombatthepodcast.com.
Love it.
I love the idea of someone playing it from the website. I think that's so vintage and cute.
We shouldn't judge people who don't really know how to use apps. So yeah. We made it easy for them.
Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah.
Love, 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 love.
Well, and also while everyone's following you, they should be following us. We're at the Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I am at Dylan McDowell. Thank you again for everything, Sean. You are terrific. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.